Też to mówi słowo, tak jak też mówisz. But what about said that one day the mainstream society will recognize and will be grateful for all Islam's contributions to the humanity. The question is, are you going to happen in the foreseeable future or after the generation?
I don't know. I'm not God. Foreseeably, no. But then foreseeably, in 1965, there was no question of a Hare Krishna, worldwide Hare Krishna movement. So, it depends a lot on us, doesn't it? It's Srila Prabhupada said that. It will spread. It's the order of Lord Chaitanya. It will happen. But those who want to partake in it, they'll get the credit. And those who don't, well, someone else will come and do it. That's all I have to say about that.
My question for the Prasadamaj. All devotees, especially leaders, should speak in accordance with the rules of the Shastra. However, there are instances in the history of Vaishnavism when someone's understanding was the only correct one, while all the other Shastras were wrong. For example, Kharazandra was the only one to recognize Maya or the philosophy. And the poem of a very twice. This kind of rare exceptions can lead to a situation of exclusion of the sadhu principle from the approved sadhu special privilege. So someone can say, I don't care for the opinion of the other sadhus in this book, since I'm quoting Srila Prabhupada in two books, I don't care for the opinion of my dead brothers. It's a kind of contradiction.
Yeah, Swarup Damodar Goswami was exceptional in this way. He was the one, he was the doorkeeper for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is described as being practically this upper rupa. He's this practically this the same person in another body. So he intimately understood the feelings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shrup Goshai Bhaga Najai Bornan Prabhu, what is it? Prabhuravishta ta bhaka gaimon. His Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that his Srup Damodar's fortune is not describable. He was completely absorbed, he was completely merged with the feelings, the body and the speech of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Another example is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who went against the whole current of Gauriya Vaishnavism at that time and established something which seemed to be new. And the established Gauriya Vaishnavas, most of them were horrified by him. So apparent exclusion of the sadhu principle may be there, Srup Damodar. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The obvious point here is that these are devotees on an extraordinarily high level. And actually they don't exclude the sadhu principle. It's just that the others, those who are seen to be sadhus, they may be, if you go back to the further tradition, you'll see that it is completely in accord with that, but some present sadhus may not be. In which case, in the case of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the tradition, as it was being practiced at that time or understood at that time, was highly corrupt. So to establish the actual tradition, he went against what was at that time understood to be the tradition. So there's a comment about this. In other words, if one wants to go against everyone else, either he's very right or very wrong.
Next question. Why some of our GBC visit before you may remember us in Krishna Mantra 3. This fact turned off quite some of our devotees to serve and ask from people for more years. What was the wisdom behind that and approach and practice?
Whoever wants to answer, I guess.
Well, I think you have to ask those who did it, how are we going to read their minds? You know, there can be so many answers. I mean, the tone of the question is almost like challenging. You know, obviously, you can look at it from a number of ways, and I don't think we really want to get into it. If someone's really curious, they should go to the people who did it. Those devotees who didn't ask them.
Okay, I'll speculate. The history is there that Kirtananda Swami did many things which were not good, but he also did some things that Srila Prabhupada appreciated. So generally at the end one is in a generous mood. Yesterday Srila Prabhupada called the highest person of high level of consciousness like the bees, they take the nectar. So you may just in recognition of that. What would you do if Shankaracharya appeared? Of course, it would be such a... I'm talking about the original Shankaracharya. Of course, if he appeared, it would be some mystic thing, so you'd be shocked. But his philosophy that he taught caused so much damage. But he's Lord Shiva also. So, of course, that doesn't fit exactly with Kirtananda, but I sometimes thought like, I mean, when I think of Shankaracharya, I'm very impressed. It's a very, very impressive story of how he went and he preached and he has followers. Not recently, I think it was last year, I was in Rishikesh. Samadhi is there of Ram Sukhdasji Maharaj, who was one of the most prominent sadhus of India of the present day. He wasn't this kind of womanizing sadhu, he was a real sadhu. Mayavadi tinge. He was connected with Gita Press, which Srila Prabhupada, about them, he said, well, they're not such bad Mayavadis. They have some devotional element also. So I happened to be in that area, and someone brought me there and said, so I went and I guess I'm setting myself up for some machine gun fire here. I offered obeisance. Great. He's a great sadhu, not philosophically a pure Vaishnava, but I spoke also. I was invited to speak I was there on Ram Nomi, and I was invited to speak by his followers there, which I did, and they were all appreciative. So there are sadhus who are not pure devotees. Now, of course, with Kirtananda, we're talking about behavioral problems. With Ram Sukhdasji Maharaj, he didn't have behavioral problems. He was a genuine sadhu in that sense. He promoted Vedic culture. His big thing was study of Bhagavad Gita, getting people to study Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada said about Kumbh Mela, so many saintly persons go there. Srila Prabhupada would, on another level, be ready to fight with every one of them philosophically, pretty much. But Siddhi said they're saintly persons. So I'm not planning to go to Kirtananda Swami's Samadhi. But it's a speculation why they offered the peace. I don't think we can read into that they approved of everything that he did and said. But they appreciated also that there's something there that Srila Prabhupada also appreciated. And that actually many devotees got their spiritual life under his guidance. So there was a time when he was doing better that can be remembered. I can only speculate that Prabhupada will remember that.
There is no doubt that Vaishnava Dharma was Srila Prabhupada's desire. However, different preachers used to have different interpretations in how to achieve that.
Really? That's good.
Why do you say
I think it's good that they have different interpretations on how to, because I don't see that many in ISKCON preachers are even thinking about how to achieve it at all. So I think it's good if they have different opinions on how to achieve it.
And why do you insist on Varnashrama and the foreign villages, Jewish foreign communities without electricity and without many different machines? Are these machines so intrinsically bad that they cannot be made in Krishna consciousness? Do you think that such life could lead to a situation in which the devotees would have to work 12 hours a day just to satisfy the basic bodily needs, especially in the West, and talking about the great fire with many regions, laundry, morning grass, dirty water from the well, etc. Would such way of life really attract many people to Krishna consciousness?
What was the first sentence? Srila Prabhupada wanted Varnashram? There's no doubt that Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, well, of course, Srila Prabhupada's real desire was that everyone be Krishna conscious. Varnashram Dharma is a corollary to that. That should always be borne in mind. Why do I insist on no machines and this and that? Well, in India, you can get away with it, you can live like that. Maybe in the West it's more difficult. Yeah, well, I was just told Radhika Gopinath Prabhu was here, the Indian devotee who was with me, from India. He's now an American citizen. He told me that devotees in Seattle, where he lives, they found some beautiful piece of land, just perfect to make simple living, high living, simple living, high-thinking community. But the land tax is $11,000 a year, which means they have to overproduce. They're practically forced to get into agribusiness to pay the land tax. And there's a stream going right through the property, but they're not allowed to touch it by law. They're not allowed to take any water from it. So the laws in the West make it so difficult to live simply. The governments have made it such that it's very, very difficult. You see, Croatia joined the European Union, and all the people used to sit on the side of the road selling raspberries and honey and things like that. Stop, dead, finished. Now you can only get it in a shop with a computerized printout. So these governments are, and increasingly India is becoming like that also. But so far, devotees are able to live like that. And not everyone can take to it, but those who do are very happy in doing so. Why are they very happy to live a life where the winter isn't so much warm? It does actually get cold in the winter, and there's no, which you wouldn't think it's cold by Lika standards, Lika winters with snow and this and that. But then there are arrangements for heating. But in India, people, they don't. I was just in Himachal Pradesh, where it's cold even in the summer. And it's a state in North India. And you can understand it's never hot in the summer, because those who've been to India see that all the rooms have fans fixed in them, ceiling fans. There are no ceiling fans there. It doesn't get there. But they don't have any arrangement for heating either. You just tolerate it, that's all. So it's cold in the winter and it's hot in the summer. Have any of you been in the summer in India, apart from Himachal Pradesh and a few other places? It gets very hot. But they're tolerating it, and they're very happy, and they can go back to, it's Grihasthas, they can go back to the city, but they don't want to because they're very happy. What is the happiness? It's Krishna consciousness. Because they have morning, noon, and evening, they all come together for hearing and chanting about Krishna. And it makes you happy. It's actually a fact. They have, one devotee told me, he was quite a few years as a brahmachari, preaching leader, this and that. He got married and lived on the farm. He said, my sadhana is much better now. And now I'm a grihastha, my sadhana is better. Because we didn't have three times a day. We only had one time a day program. In the evenings we'd be out distributing books or something. So they're happy by doing that. So I say no electricity, because as soon as there's electricity, then there are minimally electric lights. You think, well, what's wrong with that? Well, then you can stay in your room and do something else. But if there's nothing else to do, then everyone comes to the temple and they all hear and chant together. And they take rest very early and get up early and chant all their rounds. So the morning program is quite short because the sun rises early and they're out working in the fields and elsewhere. Srila Prabhupada, he said that, yes, machines can be used in Krishna's service, and he said initially that may be required to set up the infrastructure for these projects. It's a lot of work. Building houses, building roads, building barns. So there is a lot of work to do, and Srila Prabhupada said that machines could be used. But so far, if there's some major work to do, we may call in, hire a tractor. We don't keep one. In one place we went, the land hadn't been found for years, and it required a tractor to clear the land. So we're not totally fanatical about that, but pretty much so. Because we want to do it, come to the best standard as soon as possible. Whether you use machines or not, that's not directly anything to do with Krishna consciousness. But there are ramifications also. I'll give an example. At one of our farms, we have for pumping water, tube well like this. And devotees regret having that. We should have just had a traditional well where you pull water out of the ground. Why? What's the big thing? Because if the screw breaks, you have to go to the village and bring the screw, or if there's some problem, then you have to go all the way out and bring the expert to do it, and you can't get him for some days, and then you don't get water. And he says, it's easy, just keep things simple. And then it's a bit more work to pull the bucket out, but that's also some exercise. There's no shortage of exercise. Of course, pumping like this is also some exercise. But they see that the simpler you keep it, the better it is. Okay, so you could have a chainsaw for cutting the wood, but then you have to overproduce Once you start bringing in machines and electricity, you have to pay the bills, then you have to overproduce. You have to produce more than you need. Anyway, you have to produce more than you need because there's always some trade. When we're talking about self-sufficiency, there's always some things you have to bring from outside. For instance, utensils or cooking pots. Unless you have a large community, you're not going to be producing them locally. And even then, you're going to be importing metal to work with. But if you have machines, then you have to produce money. You have to make crops or do something for money. And then things start to get complex. You have to start working more. And then you get caught in the whole complex where you're living on the land but working so hard that you think, well, what am I doing? I could be in the city and living comfortably, and it defeats the purpose. So we're trying to keep it as simple as possible. And we also want to demonstrate that it's possible to do that and live as people lived for so many, up till one or two generations ago in India. Most people live like that. As far as new people not joining, yeah, but it's not so much aimed at new people joining. It's aimed more at giving facility to those who are devotees in the city and who want to increase their spiritual life and protect their children from the city culture. It's more for them. Although, if we did have such communities in the West, functioning communities, I feel we could make many devotees like this, because many people in the West are looking for something like this. Maybe, I'm not sure what the situation is in Croatia, but in America, if we had a community like this, I'm sure many people would at least be willing to give it a try, and they'd be attracted. They might not be attracted even to Krishna consciousness so much as to the lifestyle. And as I've heard, I've been told that many young people in America who have good jobs and they're all set up for a successful future, they're opting in their early life to instead buy some land and live on the land. And there are communities like that in Wales. There's some community where people are living like that, simply bartering. They're not devotees by any means. They eat meat and they make their own beer and wine and this and that. But it's basically the same principle. But most of these communities, they have their alternative energy sources. But this is a big topic. We have, before we started any of these communities, we had lots and lots of research and discussion. And we discussed with, should we use machines, should we alternative energy, you can have solar energy, but we decided not to do that. You could have cheap energy, solar energy. Wind-powered energy, we decided, no, we'll just get by with what people got by with for generations. It's so many things, and we're still discussing. We regularly, two or three times a year, the leaders of these communities, we get together and we discuss, and there's so many things. It's not so simple to live simply. For those who are there, yeah, but to set it up, and then there are legal considerations, and governments always making more and more laws, making things more and more difficult to live in any way except that they want you to live as some robot of their society. Education, the laws they're making, they make it more and more difficult. So there are many things to discuss. It's not easy. But there is the satisfaction of knowing that this is something that Srila Prabhupada very much wanted. And there is the for those who can adjust to it, and they're feeling the happiness of Krishna consciousness, which is the point, that to save time for Krishna consciousness. There was this saying, oh, you have to work so much and you won't get any time. Well, actually, the devotees there are finding it's not like that. They're surprised how easy it is to grow food. Of course, there are some different seeds need planting in different seasons and different, you have to prepare the ground in different ways. But by Krishna's mercy, you put a seed in the ground and it sprouts and a plant comes up. And after some time, it fruits and you can take the offer it to Krishna. So before we started this community, we thought one thing, no one's going to come and join, because that's what everyone said. No one will ever join. It'll only be two or three fanatics. No one will ever send their kids to Gurukul, but we have a waiting list. Because one thing, we don't want to expand explosively. Another thing is we have to build more houses. That's another major thing. If the whole ISKCON society was behind this, then resources, money could be used, because you have to buy land. Land in India is some of the most expensive in the world. A devotee in America told me, I want to buy some land and 10 acres. I said, what are you talking about? You're working as a park keeper. He said, yeah, I can save up in 2 or 3 years. I was amazed. The land is much more, in rural Texas, he was thinking of getting some land. The land is much, much cheaper than in India. And even if you convert the rupees into dollars, it's much, much cheaper. So and then raising funds is difficult because anyway, so many things. But it's going on by Krishna's mercy. And we find that there are many devotees who want to move and are inspired by this. One thing is that Indian Hindus, many of them, they have a feeling for that old culture. They want their children to learn shlokas. They think it's a good idea if their children can learn Sanskrit. They appreciate that. Many people join ISKCON. In the beginning, they may not be particularly attracted to bhakti, but they want to become more religious and more spiritual. And people may join so many Mayavadi groups, and then they become vegetarians without being told. They start to do puja every day in their home. They start to learn Bhagavad Gita shlokas. They like this culture. They relate to it. So that's a great advantage in India, that many people, if they see this way of life, they think, oh yes, this is what we want for our children also. Still it's there.
Everything will be judged at the time of leaving the body. And as I sometimes say, no one dies healthy. Therefore, practice being sick is an opportunity to, or being sick is an opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness under difficult circumstances. And one can actually make advancement under difficult circumstances. It's much more likely that at the time of leaving the body, which is the most difficult circumstance, one will already be prepared to focus the mind on Krishna, even in that situation. On the other hand, if someone lives a relatively healthy life throughout their whole life and never has the experience of being sick, it's going to come as a big shock at the time of death. One may not be so well prepared.
Someone have a laptop here? There's a letter. It's just about 4 lines Srila Prabhupada wrote. One devotee had written that there's one disciple of yours who's very sick all the time. She's really trying hard. And could you say something to encourage her? Something like this. I just remember four words from the gist of it is that she should tolerate. And then Srila Prabhupada wrote, pleasure is a misconception.
My daughter was, I think, 12 years old, and they were in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. And they came to Prabhupada for a darshan. She had leukemia, and she was going to die in a very short time. So they came there, they started to cry. And you think, Prabhupada, you know, generally people would understand the man, oh, you know, poor thing. I said, no. I said, there's no use lamenting. We're not the body. Death is not the end. We should try to spend whatever time we have left, fix the mind upon Krishna, and everything will be all right. One of the famous walk in 1975, and Prabhupada said that the whole civilization with as many people in the darkness will soon come to an end with the next war. That war is coming very, very soon. And during the conversation, the devotees were gone. What should we do, Prabhupada? What should we do? How is the worst coming? Prabhupada's answer was, chant Hare Krishna. Not that if we live another 20 years, everything will be all right. No, you die today, you die tomorrow. Everyone has to die here. But if you die in Krishna consciousness, then it's glorious. And if you die without Krishna consciousness, whatever you may have accomplished, you just have been defeated.
Okay. I'll just add one more line to that. Be realistic. Some devotees said to me just this afternoon, we hope you keep on coming here for many years. I tell them, come on, I'm not going to be living for many years. Be realistic. Once you get to 60 years old, you don't expect to live for many. Anyway, what is many years? Even if you live for 90 years, it's not many years. Birth, death, old age, and disease. Remember that? Of course it is tough when you're sick. It is difficult, no doubt. But everyone has to face this. As Srila Prabhupada, in his last 6 months, lying on that bed, said, don't think that you won't have to go through this. Because when you're young, you think, I'm very healthy. It's an illusion. Youth is a great illusion. The illusion of health. Of course, nowadays, most young people are sick also. Yeah. One of my disciples in India who's talking about they're making these brahmacharis, they're all sick. And he said about my... Now, I think, you know, I always have some. You know, everyone has health problems. He said, you, talking about me, You're so much more healthy compared to these young brahmacharis.
There's a little concern. I mean, this country for Denmark, I guess that's the best vision you can get, where even the devotees join, not as a community, joining, but the young people walking on the streets. But in such a disturbed shape. And you wonder, well, it's going to get better when they get older, isn't it? Because the older doesn't make any more. And then you start like this, destroyed by drugs and sex, anything. What kind of pendulum and clue are getting out there a few years down the line? I said, you look to me like, you can speak to them, you can speak to them, you know. They're all in our living vegetative. And you're all broken vegetative. I got confronted myself with that. In Denmark, I have a regular question. How can you lift up this karma? How can you deal with this? The patient when I was a period, I was physically very active. And I was working with 25 years old doctor, our young devotees. Man couldn't lift up the cover. It's not serious.
Therefore they bring in all the Muslims. Therefore they bring in all the Muslims. They can work. They can do some work. They're not destroyed like that. That might be one of the reasons. Just like Prahlad Ananda Maharaj told me in the First World War, the British sent wave in the trench warfare, they'd send wave after wave of men to get shot by the German machine guns. And then someone asked the general, why are you doing this? He said, anyway, these are all low-class scum people. Better get rid of them. It may be, you never know what these demons have in mind.
Just the fact that they're attempting to save like our children from that kind of lifestyle, it's an amazing investment they are doing there. I'm barely sinking Krishna, I never touch this block. It was lying in front of me on a table. I mean, the little post in this book, you know, the my children. I was scared. Great crowds not spending nights out in the driving and reception. I cannot give you pictures of this young generation or how they are spending their time today. Even in Croatia, I am talking about.
But an amazing thing is that still some young people are becoming devotees in America, and there are still people who are relatively sane at the age of 20 or so, and they're becoming devotees. But it's also, just like a couple of years ago, one young man came to me, very nice devotee. He just told me about, I asked him, so where are you from, what's your background? So he was raised by his mother only, who's a drug addict, but on prescription pills. She always has to take drugs. She's mentally unstable, and he was raised by her. And then there was someone else, I didn't personally meet them, but Ananda Tirtha Maharaj told me. She's a devotee, and she was raised by two lesbians. And this is just, you know, people just come, yeah, my mother was, I never met my father, my mother, drug addict and always shouting, and, you know, just like it's the most normal thing in the world, but they themselves are quite sane. And you even have people joining who their parents, both of them, have lived together all their life. There's still some people like that in America. Yeah. I mean, not, I'm talking about 20-year-old kids, not our generation. So there are still, and they're not Christians. They're not hardcore Christians. There's still some people who live together like that. He didn't do that.
Russians, Malayans, across the group, So he's considered an option of the short level of the tradition regarding initiation, justification, and ritual system.
Why is it not possible to think that Srila Prabhupada broke with tradition by making the Ritvik system? Because he didn't do it. We know what adjustments he made, but he didn't. Why is it not possible to think that Srila Prabhupada broke with tradition by making a Ritvik system? Because he didn't do it. Why didn't Prabhupada break with tradition by ordering people to chant their rounds standing on their head? Well, why didn't he do it? Well, he did. Why is it impossible to think that he did it, but he didn't do it? Well, he didn't do it. So, it's a funny question. But he didn't establish it, so what makes you... It's almost an absurd question, isn't it? Srila Prabhupada did this, 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 and this, so why do you think that he didn't do this? But he didn't do it. Why didn't Srila Prabhupada send people to preach on the moon? Well, he didn't do it.
Really deviated creature. He presented himself that he's the embodiment of that which the Prabhupada didn't manifest yet. He is coming in the Prabhupada line, but since the Prabhupada is indicated here, why didn't he do that? Well, let's say he had no time to do this. So this Rupa is now showing you to fulfill what Prabhupada had no time to do. Very dangerous.
Actually, I think there's merit in that, because Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to establish Varnashram, and he said, yeah, but the thing that this devotee said was that, you know, we should all get into Raga, Nuva, Bhakti more and more. What's his name? Long time Kuladri Prabhu. He said that when Srila Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan, he didn't speak about book distribution, he spoke about farms and communities, and Kuladri Prabhu got from him the impression that this phase of the Krishna conscious movement would be very different from the original phase, which was massive spreading of Krishna consciousness all over the world. So my understanding of Varnashram Dharma is that there is much to be filled in. Srila Prabhupada himself is often quoted as saying, I have given the framework, now you have to fill it in. So I agree with that, that there are many details of Vaishnavas society that Srila Prabhupada didn't directly teach us, but that we have to fill in. But there's no indication that he had any successor who would be the one to take over and do that. Of course, the person who claimed himself to be the successor wasn't talking about Varnashram, he was talking about Raga and Bhakti. And definitely the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is meant for that, to aim at that. And there should be devotees who are developing that. On the other hand, from what I understand, the particular sannyasi that you're referring to, he was very enthusiastic to preach this in the West, but after some time, he started preaching, you're not the body and all this kind of thing, because he found that it wasn't so, it's not just by telling people about it that they can come to that level. And he also said, anyone comes to me, see, all the devotees are falling down because they didn't come to me. If they come to me, they'll never fall down. And somebody went to him and they fell down. So it's not a cheap thing. It is the aim of our movement to join Krishna in his rasa dance. Srila Prabhupada writes that in one purport in the songbook. But it's so yeah, there as far as teaching Raga and Yoga Bhakti, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, well, you can't teach someone about their rasa and their, in the spiritual world. That would be revealed, and the guru can help in this regard. So, yeah, if the movement is to spread widely and fulfill Prabhupada's mandate, there will be many things on the social level that we have to research and find out what to do. Exactly what does it mean to be a kshatriya ruler in the modern age. There are many things which Srila Prabhupada indicated, but he didn't teach the details. Definitely many details we'll have to fill in. But as far as the as Srila Prabhupada is purported to have said, everything that you need to know to become fully Krishna conscious is in my books. So that's there. But there may be some danger also in something like the Ritvik idea that Srila Prabhupada and we just follow exactly what Srila Prabhupada said at that time, because exactly how Krishna consciousness is practiced in different circumstances, that may change in course of time. We don't follow exactly all the way that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed. For instance, Ekadasi observance, that was a standard thing in India, not only among Vaishnavas, any smartas, and they would follow very strictly. But what I see is people today, Srila Prabhupada didn't insist on that and didn't follow strict Ekadasi observance in terms of no taking water or food. Because most people, they physically, they're not capable of it. So there is some, as I see it, and I'm making a case for it, there is some merit to that argument that there are things that Srila Prabhupada didn't teach. He taught everything we need to become fully Krishna conscious. But there are many details also, which we, of social organization, even as the movement goes on, then there will be many philosophical challenges which we may have to make research already from the Madhva Sampradaya. Certain members have made attacks on our movement, the Babaji Sampradaya, so someone may have to do research and find out what they say, how to counter it. But to suggest that, well, I'm coming and giving you what Prabhupada couldn't give you, or I'm giving something better which he couldn't give you, that's opportunism. Okay, should we take one more question and then finish? Unless you want to go on? What is that?
It is the well-known thing that Srila Prabhupada said in the Bhagavad Gita.
But Krishna spoke about it.
We should pay him to
consecration. In a purport, maybe. Yeah. I guess so. But that's specifically stated in Bhagavatam, Deshkala Pada. Mm. Okay. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.